Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Everyone to Aggressive Negotiations, that little oasis out there on Jakku, coming at you live, or I mean, really not live. I mean, it's live for whenever you want to listen, so I mean, that's fine. But before I just dig myself into a bigger hole here on Jakku, let me introduce the one, the only, the masterful John Mills.
Thank you, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. It's a great honor.
Oh, I didn't even introduce myself.
I know. I know. Yeah. You're so excited to be on Jakku, which I think is an odd place to vacation. But hey, you know, to each their own. I was actually.
Why does everybody want to go back to Jakku?
It's a good question, isn't it? No, I was actually rewatching Force Awakens the other day, and you know, like just. Something we'll have to get to. This is not the topic of this show, but something we'll have to get to eventually is, and this goes for Tatooine as well. Man, like figuring out the ecosystem on that place. I'm convinced that.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it doesn't make any sense. Like,
Jakku,
how in the world? Like, does it rain there? Like, how do you get clouds at all? I don't understand.
Well, I know evaporators play a role, but you know, let's leave that for another day. Let's leave that for another day.
Well, John, so something that I've been thinking about, and I want to correct an erroneous statement I feel like that we made a few weeks ago when we were talking about Rogue One.
Uh-oh.
And we said something along the lines of that this is really the first war movie, right? Which I think is true in some senses, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a prevailing opinion, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot more war. And when I think about it, the first big war scene that we ever really get in a Star Wars movie, I think it's probably Attack of the Clones, where we see the actual battle, I mean, the beginning of the Clone War. You know, I mean, we see its beginning. You know, Phantom Menace has a huge battle, but I don't know if we'd call it a war between the Gungans and the Trade Federation. But
I mean, Empire has a land battle, but it's much more limited. I mean, you know, and we've retconned, we've gone back and we said, like, well, the Empire didn't want to kill everybody because they knew Luke was there. And so they were practicing restraint, and et cetera, because they wanted prisoners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So, I mean, they're not carpet bombing, you know.
Right. And I think the Jedi, there's a very, with the Ewoks involved, it's a battle. But it doesn't feel like a war zone. I agree with you. Attack of the Clones is the first time we get like a war zone type movie, you know, like big epic scale, you know, because you don't have the Ewoks or the neatness of the battle, you know, going on. So
exactly. Well, and it brought me to the idea that, you know, really the entire Clone Wars series, we see that play out. You know, and so we really do get to watch some big battles from, I mean, even just the movie, Christophsis. I mean, and the list goes on. But one of the most famous and one of the best received arcs got me really thinking about that of kind of the darkness of war was the Umbara arc. And just how I feel like that series really sets up the opportunity to do something like a Rogue One where... It's going to be a very gritty story. And I wanted to ask you about that and just what you think that arc kind of did for Star Wars and the Clone Wars itself as a way to start.
You know, it's a good question, but I would say that... where the Umbara arc really shines. And for anybody who hasn't watched it or anybody who hasn't watched it in a while, this is season 4 of Clone Wars. And it's a 4-episode arc. Anakin's at the very beginning and Obi-Wan's in it tangentially, you know, through like hologram form and everything. This arc to me, in all seriousness, comes across very much like a more Hearts of Darkness, Apocalypse Now sort of storyline.
Yes.
It's working out the Vietnam themes in greater detail. Like, Vietnam very much played on Lucas's mind throughout the originals. You know, he makes allusions to the Vietnam War, specifically with the battle on Endor. You know,
yes.
the nature-based citizens repel the invading force with greater technology and all that sort of stuff. And it's very much something that dominates Lucas's thinking with a lot of the metaphor that he uses. But this is the one that's more like Apocalypse Now. This is more like Platoon. This is more like or Hamburger Hill. This is more like the Vietnam movies that I grew up with that, you know, in the 80s were really working out that death in the jungle sort of feeling. And it is a jungle on Umbara. It's just one that's very different. I mean, it's such a creative arc, but I really do think that this one stands out because it is that Apocalypse Now storyline that has sort of been simmering under the surface the whole time.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was standing out to me as I was rewatching it and thought process for coming in and talking about tonight was the way in which it feels like not just a turning point for the Clone Wars, but for the, I don't know, even Star Wars in general, where it was not afraid to dive into the darkest depths of you know, war and the destruction slowly, the corruption of the Jedi, the pitting of, you know, these made soldiers against enemies for the benefit of wagging the dog. I mean, it's just everything about the war comes to a nasty light in this arc. And I was just watching it again and I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is being done for a quote unquote kid show.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's as dark and gritty as anything you've ever seen in any of the films that you mentioned. I mean, it's legitimately pulling scenes and things from all of that. And there's some fun bits in there, but for the most part, I mean, it's depressing as all get out.
It is. And what is
depressing is Krell.
You know, we'll get to Krell. But one of the things that I really enjoy about this arc is it really fulfills the promise. And, you know, there are several arcs like this. I'm not saying it's necessarily unique in this, but it really fulfills the promise, almost the mission statement that Lucas gave about the series when it first went, where he said he wanted to deal more with the stories outside of the Jedi. The more world building, if you will, sort of stories, more stories about the clones. We get arcs like this every so often that are with that mission statement, but this one really grabs that with both hands and goes totally for it. And something else that jumps out to me about it is there was a book I read many years ago called People of the Lie by M. Scott Peck. And one of the things that he specifically argues against in the book is that the idea of a volunteer army or an army that is not pulling from a draft of any sort. And his argument went, if you have an army that is considered a separate entity from the average citizen, the average citizen is going to be able to keep the horrors of war at arm's length, and the people who are in power in government are going to be able to use that army for their own purposes, even to the detriment of the citizens they're supposedly protecting. And I think that very much comes to light in this, because you see Krell, Pong Krell, who's a new character we get introduced to in this arc, he embraces that idea of this army is for my use. They are tools. And it's the degradation of the value of life that goes along with war, that goes along with having the idea of these clones are, to him, this is the first time we see somebody treat them, I would say, straight up like slaves. Like the Jedi up to this point are always portrayed as showing the, you know, valuing the life of the clone, whereas Krell is the one that says, you know, you're a hammer. Go nail that. You know, do what I tell you to do.
No, absolutely. And one of the things I think is genius about the arc, it's four episodes, and the way in which the first episode starts is it gives you Anakin doing what Anakin does all the time. He's leading his men. But at the same time, he's right there in the front lines with them. And if one of them has an idea that's better than his, he listens and they do that idea. And it gives you the dichotomy between the two leaders, one who treats his men like men that he's there to not only serve with, but also do all he can to protect. And the other one, like you said, who treats them as if they're worse than slaves. They are just tools right. to be used. And however many you lose, it doesn't matter because it's only a tool. It has no soul to worry about. And it really brings to light this idea of how the darkness that's creeping into Krell has created in him the ability to begin to devalue whatever it is that stands in his way mm-hmm. or that he doesn't like. And he then gets to call it clone, give it that name, and yeah. then treat it with disdain because it is just a clone. Whereas the rest of the Jedi we see are all Jedi who see that the clones transcend just this word and become actual individuals and human beings. And I mean, it's from the very beginning of the Clone Wars. The first episode that aired on television was Yoda talking to each of the individual clones saying, no, you are this and you are this, and I can see your distinct differences in the Force. Even though mm-hmm. you might all have the same genetic code, you are distinct individuals in the Force.
Right.
And it's such an interesting warping that we see here with Krell.
And the power of a name, okay? Because through the whole series, the clones, you know, Rex, Cody, Fives, you know, Dogma, you know, they all have names, and they've given themselves names because they are individuals and because the Jedi do treat them like people. And Krell calls them clone, or he forces them to refer to themselves by their number.
CT number.
Yeah, their CT number. Which is no different than a droid. You know, to him, they're just meat machines. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that you have that power of a name, which I think in a sense, and that, you know, some people will probably roll their eyes and say this is a stretch, but in a sense, it has that split feeling of what the Sith do. I have my Sith name and I have my regular person name. I'm Sheev Palpatine, but I'm Darth Sidious. I'm Anakin Skywalker, but I'm Darth Vader. And the clones, there's a difference in their treatment based on their name, like the importance of a name. And it's a little detail like that that I think really helps make an episode, you know, an episode arc like this work.
Well, and it's so interesting too because the struggle then for the clones in the story, especially Rex. And the men around him, like Fives and Hardcase and these guys who we've all seen kind of grow up on the show and gotten to know and to love these different clones. Specifically, Rex is struggling with this, and Fives and calls out to him. He says, you know, do you just believe that, or is it just engineering? Mm-hmm. And so this whole idea of who the clones are, can they transcend their original quote unquote programming. It's almost like they're kind of like a data, you know, from Star Trek in some right. ways, where can the Pinocchio become a real boy? You know, I think yeah. that's what's so fascinating. And we see that because in the end, what Rex says is that we're not just basically meat machines. We have the ability to distinguish between right and wrong. That's what makes us superior to droids. And when something is wrong, we can't just follow those orders blindly. And that's what Krell had been hoping for, is to have that blind loyalty of the programming of the clones. But the clones themselves have grown, and really that's been because of the other Jedi who have been treating them as... Mm-hmm. individuals, calling them by name and even yeah. encouraging them to have names.
And what's interesting too that you can pick up and sort of like carry forward with that is, you know, you have the clones in this series and the conflict generated in this arc by the fact that, you know, treating them as individuals versus just clones. And like you're saying, they're supposed to have the ability to, you know, to make a moral judgment, and you carry that forward to what a striking difference it is when clones are moved away from in the original movies, and then in The Force Awakens, these are people. They're not clones. They're simply conditioned to follow orders without question. And so I think you have a very interesting dichotomy there of how these beings that were literally bred from the same genetic material, they are all, you know, quadrillion uplets, I guess you would say, something like that. But they are able to embrace individuality, whereas the stormtroopers that we know later can't, even though they are individuals from birth. And I think that is such an interesting flip because it says so much about the nature of the world once the Empire takes over, once that thinking takes over of the soldier as tool.
Well, and one of the things that I think is that it has the way of referencing what's going to come with the Empire in the sense that the Empire expects blind loyalty, and it's not going to do anything to earn your trust. It's not going to do anything to earn your respect. It's just going to make you respect it by making you kneel before Zod or Palpatine or whatever. and that's the thing that's so interesting is because, again, you see the dichotomy between Anakin and Krell. One earns the loyalty of his men by not asking them to do anything that he wouldn't do, and the other one just keeps sending, you know, lambs before the slaughter until they're fed up with it. And that whole reason of why the Empire can never last anyway is because it was never going to find a way to inspire people for loyalty forever. You know, even right. The people who were in the Empire. I mean, you know, we're reading things now. And I think of Lost Stars is a great example of that, of watching people who lose faith in the Empire because they can't justify the actions where they're happening. Or it's people who just on the flip side don't care and they willingly put that aside because it's benefiting them. But the rest mm-hmm. of the galaxy, there's nothing there to inspire them. So what inspires them is the idea which comes up from the rebellion. And all of this is playing out subtly here in this arc. And I think it's fascinating.
I agree that it's fascinating. And of course, the person that we need to address directly, the character, Pong Krell. Krell is a really interesting character from the beginning. And they do a really good job of having him be just seem like a jerk, and then, you know, a fair but stern jerk. And then as you get to know him in more and more episodes, they really do a good job of peeling the onion. So you really realize by, partway through the second episode of the arc, or, you know, the beginning of the third, you're thinking there's something wrong with this guy. There's something off. What's happening here? And they fulfill that brilliantly, I think, in this arc. Apologies if this is spoiling anything for anybody, but I'm willing to bet that anybody listening to us has probably watched this arc by now. I want to sort of jump ahead with Krell, and we can talk about him in more detail, but that moment at the end where Krell's judgment is delivered, the endless discussion I think that you can have philosophically is, was it right? Was it necessary? Does it being necessary make it right when they dispatch Krell at the end? When Dogma is the one who followed the orders all the time and basically said the same reasoning that Palpatine uses to justify Anakin killing Dooku, he was a threat. You had to kill him. There was no point in keeping him alive. What do you think about that? Like, is there any philosophical conundrum in that moment for you?
It's an interesting place to be because, one, you know, we've got our first reference and first visual of clones turning against a Jedi. And yet, this is actually a Jedi who has committed treason And therefore, they are actually doing what they should do, which is to take him into custody and try to turn him in. The question of whether or not they kill him so that if the Umbarans overrun this base, that he doesn't fall into their hands and then give them all the information that he has, is a moral dilemma. And one to which I'm not sure there is a sufficiently good answer to, because I think it's a gray area, and I think you can make arguments on both sides that are legitimate.
What would you have done?
I think that I think I might have taken the chance that you would wait until he could be served up for Jedi justice, which, you know, I'm sure would be swift as well when they realize what happens. What was interesting is I wish that there had been some kind of follow-up to this somewhere, in a mention somewhere, with Yoda and maybe Mace and Obi-Wan or something talking about, you know, seeing Jedi get closer and closer to the dark side, and referencing Krell would have been interesting. I just wish there had been something in there, because this is such a big moment in the Clone Wars series of watching a Jedi be tempted by the dark side and being like, screw all you mothers, I'm joining, you know, the side that's actually going to win. I'm going to become Dooku's new apprentice. You know, it's fascinating. I don't know. What would you choose, John?
I would like to tell myself that I would stay my hand and pursue the course of justice. But in that situation, the enemy's knocking on the door. If they get a hold of him, and this is somebody, this isn't just a clone that they've captured. This is four-armed Jedi who is obviously, I mean, he's killed a ton of clones, both with his strategies on purpose and by his own hand. He's clearly stated, as soon as they come and get me, I'm turning y'all in, and the whole war is going to turn because I'm going to be the one to tell Dooku everything. For me, there's an argument, and I wind up falling on the side of you gotta do it. Like, you're either going to, because of his stated decision, you're either going to have to kill him later or kill him now. And if you kill him now, you limit the damage that he inflicts later. Now, as a moral person, the person who was raised with the teachings that I was, I don't want to answer that way. I don't think I'm not saying it's right, but I could very clearly see myself standing there and saying, it's either now or later. It's going to be one of those two times.
Well, and the interesting thing there, too, is that it somewhat is a question that gets asked by the clones themselves on whether they should break orders and do what they know is right. You know, that's another, you know, moral conundrum to which they find themselves in. Do you respect the chain of command and do what's wrong, or do you follow what's moral and right and do that? And they have to ask that question. And so here I think it's very interesting, because the question being asked isn't just moral, but it's also tactical. It's also so much bigger than just what's the right thing to do. The right thing is influenced by so many more factors than if, you know, you caught a murderer and, you know,
right. In a different situation, 100% of the time, I say he's in jail, he's neutralized, we let justice take its course here. In this specific instance, I don't see a way around it. I just don't. And, you know, maybe that's a failing of my own vision. I don't know. But to follow up on a thought that you mentioned earlier, this is a cartoon, this is a kid's show. One of the things I love about this show, about it being an animated show, about it being targeted toward children, is I've often subscribed to what I call the Beowulf theory. When people say, oh, kids can't handle that, Beowulf used to be a bedtime story, okay? And, you know, the whole story, the whole arc of that. I mean, essentially, you know, I mean, he beats Grendel to death with his own torn off arm, and then he like kills his mom. Like, you know, there's a thing there. Like, kids can withstand it. And a show like this, it is animated. It does ask this tough question. I want kids, you know, maybe not. I mean, like a 3-year-old isn't going to watch this, but I want kids to be challenged like this. I want those thoughts early in them, because they have to be able to start formulating their thoughts as they get, you know, closer and closer to maturity. I mean, this is, I think this arc is a tremendous teaching tool in a lot of ways for kids to say, okay, look at all of these difficult situations. What do you dislike? What do you like? What is right? What is wrong? And I think it can spur a lot of interesting conversations with parents.
No, and I absolutely agree with that. I think it's one of those things that, you know, if you're a good parent, you're sitting down and you're watching this with your kid, and then you get to turn around and be like, okay, well, let's talk about the, you know. Like,
right.
You're absolutely right. You know, stories are meant to be, or at least they used to be, meant to be helpful teaching devices for all of us, you know, and from youngest to oldest. And I think Star Wars is definitely within that mold. George has always had things to say mm-hmm. about the world and about existence and all of this stuff. And I think the message here is that there are times, obviously, when things do get muddled. It's not always easy to find the right way to do things. And what's really interesting to me is to watch and see that, you know, these clones have been watching Anakin Skywalker, mm-hmm. you know, for all these years now. And really where they take their lead from is him. And so they get their impetuousness, they get their individuality, their adaptableness, their independence, their thought process, I think a lot from watching Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, I think, goes to show one of the strengths of Anakin, you know, and I think that's one of the greatnesses of the Clone Wars. And even just this arc here is watching the way in which he's raised these clones
mm-hmm.
with him and the actions that they do. You know, you can't imagine Anakin himself not taking all of these actions as well. And they're all good actions. You know, whether or not they're necessarily right or wrong when we're talking about that moral gray area with, you know, do you shoot Krell or not?
Yeah.
That, you know, but on a whole, all of the actions to which they do would make him proud, and he would do himself. And so I think that it's interesting to see the ways in which, you know, Anakin specifically had such an impact on the people around him. And this arc, you know, they spend most of the time without him.
Yeah.
And yet they're acting as if almost in some ways he's still there. Inside.
Right.
His, you know, like he's their little shoulder angel.
Right. His influence is still there. And I think also it reinforces that idea, because I think the whole Clone Wars series reinforces the idea of, why would the clones blindly follow Anakin even after Order 66, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is because he has spent years, he's going in and he's doing a questionable thing when he goes to the temple, or when he goes here, or when he does this thing after he's turning evil and everything. He's built up all of this goodwill with the clones, where when he shows up and he says, we got to go do this, the clones that are marching in with him are like, well, yeah, I mean, we fought by this guy's side for years. I mean, in a sense, you see Palpatine leveraging the trust that Anakin has legitimately earned to his own advantage. That's why Anakin is such a good lever for flipping things over. But one of the things I also want to talk about with this episode is, not this episode, this arc, is the concept behind it is so unrestrainedly beautiful. From the design of the planet to the technology that they take over, like down to, you know, the way that the holograms work, the design of everything
yes.
is just absolutely breathtaking. And I think that there is the direction through the whole arc is great. But one episode I want to call out in particular is the one directed by Walter Murch. the General, which is such a dizzying wall of sound and vision experience. It actually jumps out, I think, from the rest of the arc, because the camera movement is different, the sound treatment is different, and it's the one that is the most disorienting. And it does such a good job of communicating to somebody who's never been in a fight. I've never gone to war, but I feel like after I've watched that episode that I've got an idea. I don't feel like I've gone through it. That would be reductive of anybody who has. But I feel like I can understand a little bit better how confusing and how disorienting it is to be in that situation. And I think that I just me being me and, you know, all that, you know, like doing Great Shot Kid with Mike and everything. Like, I look at that episode and I look at the directorial choices and the editing choices and the sound choices that are made. And he was such the right guy to choose for that, because it is, even outside of you can literally pluck that episode out of the rest of the arc and just watch it on its own. And it's so successful on so many levels. I just felt the need to call that out.
No, I was actually thinking the same thing as you, because we had been talking, you know, a few weeks ago about this whole idea, because we were talking about Walter Murch in regards to a book you were reading, and then mm-hmm. you were like, oh, and he directed that episode, and so we started talking about the whole thing, and I was noticing, too, that he did some things that you don't see a lot in the Clone Wars, where you get the super close-up of the face.
Yes.
So you got a really super close-up of Krell's face, and then you had one of the clone, and you saw all the detail on the helmet, because, I mean, the camera is just so close. And yeah. It was jarring and wonderful, and you're absolutely right that the design work here is just outstanding. It's as if the Clone Wars team was given license by George, I want you to create some of the craziest things we've ever seen
yes.
in Star Wars, but it'll make sense on a planet that, you know, we always have these planets where it's all one thing, a forest or desert or whatever. This one being all shrouded in darkness
yes.
gave you the opportunity to create this luminescent world
mm-hmm.
with these weird creatures and weird people and their weird centipede like gosh.
And that is one of the things that I love about Star Wars overall, is the embrace of the absurd. Like, I'm not saying this to pick on, you know, to say like my preferred franchise is better than another, but if we were watching Star Trek The Next Generation, they would feel a need to explain everything about why the planet's this way and how it can still exist, blah, 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 techno babble. Whereas this show and everything about Star Wars, it's just, you know, why is it shrouded in darkness? Eh, you know, thematically it works. Okay, cool. You know, so how would a planet shrouded in darkness, how would it have developed differently? And that gets back to, you know, that sort of sociologist bent that Lucas has of how would the culture be different if we changed a couple of key pieces here? And I think it's also because you mentioned the centipede tank. It's so cool. It's like a dark mirror of Kashyyyk, where all of the technology seems to be one with nature. And mm-hmm. so what would that look like on a planet shrouded in darkness? I just think that's so cool.
Well, one of the things that got me thinking, you know, because obviously Anakin leaves. And it's because he's been called away by the council, because they've had a request from the Chancellor that he mm-hmm. return to Coruscant. So, and I'm sure this is probably an obvious question, but do you think that's because the Chancellor can sense what's happening on Umbara and wants to see how Krell's going to play out, see if he's going to be maybe worthy of Dooku picking him up?
Yes, absolutely. A Sith would sense it and say, all right, let's give him a test. Can he get it out? Can he get out of here alive? And if so, make contact with him. And he doesn't get out of there alive, which I'm sure just completely has got to blow Palpatine's and Dooku's mind, because we know Order 66 is coming. And so if the clones can start thinking for themselves on this level and turn against the Jedi, well, that's great, because if the chip doesn't work, we've built doubt into them with, because the story of Umbara is going to spread. Keep an eye on your Jedi. Are they actually acting in your benefit? Think about it.
Well, and that's an interesting question, because it also made me think about the other side. Does Palpatine worry about the clones, that they might become too independent, that they may be able to short-circuit the programming that they've had? And I think that's a really interesting... I mean, because when you think about it, and are the clones themselves taken out of service, not just because they have growth acceleration and they decide not to use them anymore, but because Palpatine in the end finds it easier for just normal everyday people to be swayed, you know, into service than somebody bred to be a warrior, but then on top of that, been bred to think independently. Like, maybe that's dangerous.
I mean, I would go the length to say that there is a, you build a fear and a, like, when you have an army that is kept separate through indoctrination, they still have their family ties. I mean, we've never seen a stormtrooper have family ties. Although I will say, I mean, we've seen it on occasion. I remember, I think it was issue 86 of the original Marvel run, where Princess Leia encountered a stormtrooper who was an Alderaanian. And he actually wore a piece of Alderaan around his neck. I'm pretty sure it was issue 86. Anyway, and she called him out on it and said, you know, how dare you wear that around your neck? The Empire destroyed it. And, he talks about order and everything like that. And I think that the stormtroopers no longer being clones shows the culture shift, because the Empire can exercise its power in conscript or take these kids and pull them into military service, which is a demonstration of power. Or the families are dedicated enough to the Imperial cause and the search for order and everything that their kids go, so they don't need to convince them. So, you know, like, do you get what I'm saying? Where, like, half of it's a power play.
Yeah, yeah.
We can take your children from you. And then the other half of it is, you believe in us so much, you'll give your children to us. And so it's a win-win for the Empire.
Well, and I think it's also interesting, too, because a lot of times you don't want to question who's feeding you, you know? And the idea that you have these people who probably join the Imperial service as a way to make a living, and, you know, it's just kind of what they do, you know, and so it becomes this whole question that I just thought was really interesting of maybe Palpatine, did he just expect the clones to be this independent? Because this won't be the only problem that we run into with the clones in the Clone Wars being quote unquote defective from their programming, and I think it creates this interesting thing, and it also, you know, obviously some of these clones are able to do that because Rex survives. You know, we know from Rebels, you know, we get Wolf and Gregor and these guys who do survive, and because they rebelled so much, they took the chips out of their heads so that they couldn't follow the order. So,
although thanks to Fives, who is one of the people this specific arc who is yelling at Rex most severely about, this is insane to follow his orders, and you know better than this, and you shouldn't be listening to him.
Right.
And, I mean, how crazy is it that this show, when it first was debuting, and I, you know, our love for the Clone Wars series is well documented, and I know we keep, you know, we've come back to this point, you know, in terms of, you know, kids watching this show and everything, but how crazy is it that a show that the general consensus was, oh, well, you know, okay, this is just a show that's going to take place, everything that is explored in this arc is so amazing, and I think so indicative of why this whole series is so adored by fans. And the thing is, while I was looking around, I noticed a Reddit thread that said, this is the series, this is the series of episodes in Clone Wars that I would show to somebody first to get them hooked. And of course, everything's told non-sequentially in Clone Wars anyway. Would this be the one you would choose to, like, somebody's never watched Clone Wars before. They've dug their heels in and they don't want to watch it. And you say, listen, I got a couple episodes for you to watch. Would this be the arc, or would this be in your top five, your top 10? Where would this be in the ranking?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that this is definitely, you know, when it comes to things that you would show somebody, it's definitely in the top, you know, five of arcs, just because it's quintessentially Clone Wars, and it's Clone Wars at its absolute best. You know, I think of the Darth Maul arc in season five is fantastic. The way that connects together is a good one. The Yoda arc in season six, some of those things where it's just the way in which this series was able to dive so deeply into the mythology of Star Wars and blow your mind.
Yeah.
I think that and the Mortis arc are probably the ones that, like, if I'm trying to get somebody to understand just the crazy awesomeness of what George was able to do with this show, those are some of the ones that I think of. Anything that comes to mind for you that I missed or that you're like, oh, no, I'd add this.
No, I think Mortis arc definitely gets there. I think that Voyage of Temptation arc gets there.
Yes.
Definitely gets there. I think this is potentially in the conversation for number one. This four episode arc would be the number one position for me if I were talking to somebody who was not enamored with the Jedi, especially in the prequels per se. Somebody who loved Star Wars, but they didn't, you know, they were like, oh, well, I didn't like the way the Jedi went in, you know, episodes one, two, and three. I would say, okay, you know what? Watch this. Because this arc, I think, ticks all of the marks, because it's about the clones. It's about the world building. It's about the way the galaxy is going. It's about how things progress from two to three to four. And it sets up the whole idea. And I think it does a great job of explaining how the Jedi themselves, to a singular person, are flawed at this point. And I think that Krell is such a fascinating character that if somebody watched this arc who was not already like a prequel fan or something like that, I think you sold them after this.
Well, and I think one of the interesting things is that almost at the very end of the last episode of the arc, the clones are having this conversation and Rex says an important question. What's the point of all this?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's the question that the Jedi didn't ask enough. And if you want to talk about what was actually the problem, was they didn't ask enough. What's the point of all this? Why are we doing this? You know, nobody sat back and asked the big, you know, blatant question, because they got so mired in all of the details that, you know, it got lost. And Rex, though, here puts that out there for everyone. What's the point of all this? Well, as we all know, there's no point to all of it, because it's the only point is for Palpatine to get into power. That's the only point to all of this.
And you know what? I realize that if I were to try to sell somebody on reading Star Wars books, what would pair nicely with this would be Shatterpoint. Would be a great book to give somebody, because it deals with the same sort of themes. And it also deals with a Jedi who's kind of gone off the rails, but in a different way than Krell, because she makes the argument, we shouldn't have sent an army. We shouldn't have grown an army. We shouldn't have done anything like that. We should have just dropped, she says, a Baradium bomb, but essentially a nuke. We should have just dropped a nuke on Geonosis and killed them all and been done with it. But because the Jedi thought that was wrong, now we're in a war. Like, I think that that is... Like, I think that if you pair Shatterpoint with this arc, you get a really interesting... Krell goes down the road of, you know what? The galaxy is going the way of I'm going to get mine and you're going to get yours and who cares what happens in between. And then you also have the Jedi in Shatterpoint who reacts differently by saying, I'm in a state of despair because we should have killed everybody and screw it, lost Obi-Wan and Anakin, because otherwise, you know, because that would have prevented the whole war to begin with.
And it also, I think, would pair nicely with Battlefront Twilight Company.
Ooh, yes, it would.
Because you see the opposite of that, you know, where people are fighting for a cause, for a reason. They know why they're there. Yeah. And as difficult and as greedy as against, they have a hope, but it can still get mired. You know, and so I think if I was going to recommend maybe a book to go along with this as well, I like Shatterpoint. I was thinking as the, kind of the flip view for seeing the rebellion and its struggles, but on a different side where they, you know, they know what the point is, but it still doesn't make it easy. That's a great pairing too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just it really does show. I mean, this is the frustrating thing as a diehard Star Wars fan. Just as sort of like a last thought, is there has been, and the thing is, I've railed against the expanded universe, you know, from time to time and everything like that. There are gems out there, and I think that Clone Wars is a gem, and I think that this story arc is a diamond among the gems for the stuff that can be told outside the movies, and it supports the argument that the movies are awesome and I love them, but they do leave some things that are, you know, open to interpretation and those sorts of things. And this is the type of supporting story arc that I like, because it doesn't, there's nothing about the Krell story arc that is vital to understanding episodes 1 through 7 or Rogue One, but it still adds a great deal of weight to what we've seen, because the questions it asks are corollaries to the main themes that we've been exploring.
I think this is what has made, as much as I like Rebels, it's never been able to surpass the Clone Wars, and that's because of the arc story structure that we got here. And you mentioned that the Clone Wars is told out of sequence, but that's true, sort of, because after a while, it really does start to stay in sequence, and that building is pretty incredible. Like, it actually really works. And the cool thing about the Clone Wars is you can watch it out of sequence, and it works. You can watch it in sequence, and it works together beautifully. And so I think that's an incredible thing about it. But for the most part, I think there are probably a few arcs on one hand that I can count that I'd be like, you could never watch those in the Clone Wars and be fine. But the rest of it, I think you'd get something from. I wish that Rebels would pick up more of this type of story structure.
Agree.
And it's interesting to me that even though with the arc nature of the Clone Wars, there still was a serialized feel to it. You could, if you do watch it all in order, you can see how each thing, each puzzle piece fits together. And that's really cool. And so, you know, that's for me, like you're saying, I'm such a huge fan of this. And part of it is because the way that it dove into all of these different parts of the Star Wars galaxy with such depth, with such love. And I enjoy revisiting this series so much. And so I'm so glad that, you know, we just decided that, let's talk about Umbara, because, man, this is great stuff.
Yes, I agree. And this will not be the last arc that we visit from the Clone Wars. We can promise you that, especially as they start to pair even more nicely with some of the things that that we'll be getting, you know, upcoming. I mean, we've still got more Star Wars movies on the way, and potentially another animation project that they're announcing as of the recording of this. So, yeah, I think that Clone Wars is such a rich depository of just excellent writing and excellent world building with Star Wars. This will definitely be just one of many trips back to that part of the timeline.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. Well, I was thinking, you know, if anybody would like to share about what they're thinking and feeling about the Clone Wars, what we talked about here, anything else that or any of our shows, make sure you hit us up on Facebook. It's a great place to go. Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We post all of our shows there, so it's a great way to interact with John and I about the episodes. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We love chatting with people there. We're at The Jedi Masters. That is just our show account. And then, of course, The Nerd Party, at Join Nerd Party. Either way, you can interact with John and I. And if you'd like, if you want to write us an email because you've got some thoughts and it's just too copious for, you know, maybe even Facebook, you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose aggressive negotiations, and that'll come to John and I, and we'll get to interact with you that way as well. So there's so many different places that you can interact with us. We love getting your feedback. And honestly, John, I'd say also one of the best, if you love the show and you want to help it grow, is, you know, maybe hit us up on iTunes with a star rating and review.
That would be fantastic. We would appreciate it. We've gotten some great reviews up to this point. We do this for love, not money. And we love hearing from you that you're enjoying this. I mean, it makes it all worthwhile 100% of the time. We'll keep doing it. You'll keep listening. But we would love to hear from you for certain. Matt, where can people reach you online?
Yeah, you could find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram if you do that, MRushing. You could find me on the Trek FM network doing a few shows, The Orb with Chris Jones. We're talking about Deep Space Nine. And then I'm doing the General Geek Show over there, the 602 Club. We're talking about all the fandoms we love. That does include Star Wars. You can also find Star Wars, the 602 Club collection. All of those are on iTunes. So make sure you check those out and subscribe. Here in the network, I'm doing another show with my good friend Drea Kaufman, and we've been walking through each and every chapter of Harry Potter. We're recording this, we recorded a couple more chapters, so we're already about midway through the first book. It's the perfect time to join us, though, because we're going slow. If you've never read Harry Potter and you need to get into it, gosh, just join us. If you love Harry Potter and you've read it a million times, well, we're talking about how all this stuff connects. So I really do hope that you will join us. John, gosh, I'd be so remiss if I didn't ask you where people could find you, because you've got a lot of good stuff going on online that people need to be aware of.
Oh, well, you can find me as Kessel Junkie online. I lurk on Twitter a whole lot, so that's probably the best place to hit me up, but that's my name pretty much everywhere. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where there's no locked topic per week. We just sort of, we open a couple of drinks and get a little crazy, but about geeky things. You can find me over on the Trek.fm network, co-hosting Stage 9 with Mike Schindler, where we explore the non-Trek works of Star Trek creators. And you can find me right here on the Nerd Party Network, also with Mike Schindler, co-hosting Great Shot Kid, which focuses on the non-Star Wars works of Star Wars creators. Also, sometimes they're Star Wars works, but, you know, it's a gray area at times. So go on over and check us out on Great Shot Kid here on the Nerd Party Network.
Well, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.